Well, it is mid-October, and it's time for some potpourri, I suppose. So sit back and listen as we round up a lot of things that are going on today. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be back with you, Barry. Good to be back in the studio after being absent for 2 weeks. I was on vacation, which I got to see my mom. And, of course, we were on vacation in Orlando, Florida. Well, we were in Orlando, Florida we were to arrive on the Sunday after Matthew hit down there. Now, I can tell you that Orlando wasn't in too bad a shape. They got what amounted to a tropical storm. You know, a lot of wind, a lot of rain, swirling winds and all that stuff. So they weren't in too bad a shape. They had some low spots that got some flooding and that kind of thing. But they were able to handle that pretty well. We were supposed to go down the way we normally go there. And we were supposed to be in a place near St. Augustine. It's a Amelia Island. We couldn't go there because Amelia Island was underwater. We were supposed to be there on Saturday. And Saturday, Amelia Island was underwater. I-95, which was the way we normally would go down, was closed. I-26, which we cut over from I-77 to I-26 in South Carolina, that was closed. Parts of I-95, I think, were very badly damaged or destroyed. Jacksonville, Florida was closed. A lot of the stuff on the coast where the hurricane came in were simply closed. And it was a little precarious. Now, what's interesting about that, Barry, is I think on Thursday of last week, I think it was Thursday, we went over to the Kennedy Space Center to do the tour over there. Which is vastly different than it used to be. I was there about 8 years ago, and it was good and it was fun, and the sites were all very interesting there. The next to last space shuttle was on the pad while we were there and all that stuff. Very different now. It's almost like a theme park experience. There are a couple of rides there, and there's one thing that sort of simulates a liftoff experience where you're supposed to be in a pod in the shuttle bay when they do a liftoff. So they simulate the gravity and the rattling and the sound and all that stuff that you would, that was pretty close to worth the price of admission.
I'm sure it would have been.
So there's a couple things where they have a space shuttle in the, I'm trying to remember which one they have, Endeavor maybe, but one of the space shuttles is in the building. They have a building built around it. So you can actually go up and examine the thing close up. You can't get in it, but they've got it hanging at an angle, like it's in a turn. So you can see it underneath, and you can see it on top, and you can see all the tiles and how they attach the tiles. And I remember my wife marveling that she says, "Well, none of these tiles are the same." And I go, "Yeah, that's right. None of them. They were all custom made because that's a curved surface. And the only way to get the tiles to fit seamlessly was to make them individually, and they're all numbered. And you can see the numbers on them." So just think of some engineer. It's like building a, 100,000 piece puzzle. I'm sure they have engineering drawings that show exactly where each tile goes, the orientation it goes in, all that stuff. But of course, the shuttles are retired now. And the big push at NASA, the whole thing, what's very interesting is they have the dramatic music playing constantly everywhere in the background. It sounds like a big John Williams concert. if you know who John Williams is, he's the guy who did the music for like Star Trek, you know, the Star Trek movies in the 80s, and the I think he did Star Wars, and he, you know, he does all this very dramatic space music, if you will. I mean, you know, it's full orchestration, it sounds really good, but it's, you know, it's constantly on. Well, the big push right now is the manned mission to Mars. Now, Barry, we need to talk about what that means, because the manned mission to Mars means lots and lots and lots of money.
Of course it does.
Now, one thing that NASA downplays strongly, and of course a lot of these guys like Elon Musk and some of these other guys who want to do, you know, who were talking about launching their own stuff to Mars, the stuff they downplay is the fact that once you get there, what do you do? And the answer is, you better get protection against ionizing radiation, because Mars is bathed in it. Mars does not have a protective magnetic field like we have here, because it doesn't have a rotating iron core. One of the things the Earth has is a rotating iron core that sets up a magnetic field, and what that magnetic field does is capture particles. It captures solar particles, the solar wind, that would, frankly, kill us. In rather short order, unless we lived underground. And, you know, we've all heard about the Aurora Borealis. Some of us have seen it. I've seen it in small doses. And despite the fact that I lived in Michigan for 11 years, I never actually caught one full on, which is very disappointing to me. But what the Aurora Borealis is having the sun or the Earth's magnetic field, having captured all those particles, now has to discharge them, and it discharges them in the form of these light shows at the poles. It happens in both the northern and the southern hemisphere near the magnetic north. And what's really cool, you know, you think about that. I always laugh about people who say, well, there have to be other planets. You know, there's so many suns and there have to be other planets. Yeah, we all know there are other planets. I mean, you can detect planets. You can't see them, despite what NASA tells you. We know this planet does this and this and this and this, and they don't know any such thing. They're sort of backing into some data that they're getting from telescopes from very far away. About the only sun we can see the disk of is most people will say it Betelgeuse. It's Betelgeuse, which is the big red star in Orion's shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I believe they have caught a glimpse of the disk, but it's a huge star. It's a what they call a red giant, and it essentially is about the size. The diameter of the sun would extend from where our sun is out to about halfway to the orbit of Jupiter. It's huge, and that's why you can see it, why you can catch just a glimpse of the disk, even though it's so very far away, because these stars are very, very far away. So I read about these things. You know, there's a great movie out there called The Privileged Planet, and it talks about why we're in exactly the right part of the galaxy. We're in exactly the right part of the we're in an arm away from the center part of the galaxy, which means we're not getting the radiation from the center part of the galaxy, which is tremendous. We get some of that radiation and we need it, but we're in exactly the right part of the solar system. We have exactly the right kind of planet with a magnetic field. It's exactly the right size. It's exactly the right temperature. We're around exactly the right kind of sun. Gee, it seems kind of like maybe a miracle, you know?
Well, yes, and I don't know if you've ever watched, there is a kind of a documentary video that was put out by a group called Alestra Media, which are connected with the Discovery Institute out in Seattle, and it's called The Privileged Planet.
Well, that's the one I was just talking about, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say that this is a beautiful, beautiful video. It's based upon a book of the same name that was written by an astronomer at Iowa State University by the name of Guillermo Gonzalez. And Gonzalez actually lost tenure at Iowa State because his, you know, assertion was, just as you said, all of these things that are happening, you know, with the position of the Earth and where it is in the solar system and where it is in the particular spiral arm, the location of the particular galaxy that we're in, and all these particulars mathematically make it impossible for the Earth to have been there by chance, to have developed from natural forces, if you will. And it's a great teaching tool, Chuck. We've used it with our kids, you know, when teaching some of the sciences, astronomy, things of that nature. I don't know if it's still readily available out there for our listeners, but I'm sure if they went to Amazon or Google or somewhere, they might find a copy. Or every once in a while in a used bookstore, it might pop up. But it's a great DVD. Very, very informative and engaging. And it really does. I mean, it makes you stop and realize that there are no things that are chance in the universe. There can't be. If the universe had randomness in it in any respect, Chuck, the whole thing would unravel. Just think with the Earth. If there was any real randomness to the Earth, it wouldn't sustain life.
No.
I mean, there's this whole list of things, and then, you know, the powers are like 10 to the 19th power, you know, of probability that it could have happened by happenstance, you know. And you start looking at all these, and of course you have to add all these things up because they had this whole list, and I forget how many. I think it was like 26 or 27 different things that had to happen and had to be present for a planet to be habitable. In other words, to support life. You know, you have to have water. You have to have, you know, a certain climate. You have to have. I mean, they just went down this huge list. And when you stop and think about it in those respects, you start realizing just how awesome God is and just how much He loves us and just how foolish the wisdom of the world is. Just how ridiculous it seems. Now, I'm sure that, you know, when you went on the tour down there at the Space Center and all those other places, it was all about man, and how wonderful man is and how great, you know, we've done all this great stuff. But, you know, Chuck, my position on that is that man doesn't create anything. He just discovers something that God's already created. Even the laws of mathematics have to bend to God's will. You know, when those engineers and scientists are creating those specific, you know, tile number 97,643 that has a 0.036 pitch on it, well, it's because the whole idea, the dynamics, the aerodynamics, everything that has to happen has already been predetermined by a loving, superintending God who created this universe, who created this world, who created the laws of nature, as we're talking about, and it all has a symmetry and a balance to it that's just absolutely breathtaking.
And that's why when you ask presuppositional questions to scientists, they don't want to play. You know, you'll ask, fine, you get down to the baseline, and that is, okay. We believe in a transcendent God who basically created everything physical, all physical matter, anything that exists in space and time, God created. And what they believe is that matter and energy are self-created. Well, that's impossible, of course. Things can't. R.C. Sproul has a has an audio that I laugh about every time it plays. It's just a little clip from a talk he gives, and he says, you know, he heard a scientist somewhere say that, or it was a report on the news, because news people are notoriously bad at science. All you got to do is look at the global warming controversy and what it's being driven by. Well, it's not being driven by people who actually understand the data. It's being driven by people who are being manipulated by people who get money over the whole man-made climate change thing, to continue their research into how to stop it. When and the answer always to stop it is, well, we need more government control. It's always more government, and we always need to give More government and more money to science. That's all we ever hear. Because the scientists will solve the problems. In any case, R.C. Sproul gives a kind of an impassioned speech where he says, "I heard someone say 14.5 billion years ago the universe exploded into being." Well, he said, he says, from nothing. And he says, nothing can't explode. There's no way that nothing can explode. Things can't just simply come into being. And now the current argument is that our current universe was born from something that happened in a parallel universe, in a different dimension. And I always laugh at that. I go, well, that's a rescuing device, Barry. That's what's called a rescuing device in an argument, because you can't come up with something with a reason why something is here. Therefore, you make it come from someplace else.
Of course.
Let's see. One of the members of Watson and Crick, and I can't remember. I think it was Watson. Watson, I think, is still alive, or maybe just passed recently. I'm kind of behind on that particular news. But I think it was James Watson who basically said, "Well, life probably didn't evolve here. We don't have the right conditions. It came in from someplace else." That's what's known as the, I think it's called, directed panspermia. In other words, that life was planted here from someplace else. Well, that begs the question now.
It was aliens.
Yes. Well, essentially, I don't think he goes that far. It's more like it all blew in on an asteroid, because the right chemicals came in on an asteroid. Well, Barry, as every scientist, everybody with biological training knows, you can mix chemicals all day long. And you don't get a being. You get a big vat full of chemicals. You can make membranes, and you can sort of set it up like a cell would set up. But there's two things about that. First of all, it never becomes a living cell. Second of all, you have to remember that somebody created it in a laboratory. So in other words, it did not self-organize. It was organized. Well, if we gave it enough time, or if we were able to accelerate the process, we could. It's been tried. Yeah, they'll tell you that membranes set up on their own all the time. Yeah, when you put the right stuff in and set up the right conditions. And what the claim is that the right conditions at one point, boundary conditions, they call it, existed at some point in the primordial slime on Earth, you know, blah, 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 blah. The problem is that's all speculative. That's not science. Science is observational by its nature. Yeah. That's all speculation. We know this happened because we know it could happen. Well, even if it could happen, and as I've said just a minute ago, you can put all the stuff together, you can get membranes to form, and you still don't have a cell. What you got is a mixture of chemicals with a bunch of membranes in it. That's not life.
No, it's not.
And it's certainly not sentient life like the higher animals have. Nobody really understands why single-celled creatures do what they do. They don't understand why they have perfectly designed little engines to get them from place to place. Nobody really understands how that all came about. Well, I should say that no naturalist thinking people understand what that's all about. I think you and I understand what it's all about. It's all here because God said those things need to exist for my particular purpose. So therefore he made them. He created right. Those membranes, and he created those chemicals, and he put them all together, and he breathed life into it. Something that human, you know, I keep hearing that scientists have done this and scientists have done that and scientists have done another thing with reproduction. We've been able to take skin cells and create egg cells. That was the latest one I saw, and I said, okay, so what? You still had to hijack the existing system. There's an old joke about that, about the guy who challenges God, and he says, I can make my own life too. I can make my own man. So of course this goes against, of course, the character of God, but God comes down and takes the challenge, and he says, okay, I'll take your challenge. He He says, I don't think you can make your own man. So the guy bends down. He says, watch me. He says, he bends down in the soil, and he starts forming things into the into shapes. And God says, whoa, 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 stop. He says, first you got to make your own dirt.
Exactly. Exactly. Chuck, you know, there are so many places we can go to with all this. But, you know, the key is, and I think the entire theme is, God is sovereign in the affairs of man. God creates and God superintends and God directs. And yes, that's true even in our natural relations and our social and our political and economic and everything else that goes on in this world. You know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that refrain about, well, we'll just let the government fix it all. And it's like, okay, show me how the government can bend the laws of nature. You know, show me how the government can, in any way, shape, or form, through man-made edicts, create a counterforce to what God has already instituted and put in place. It's not possible, Chuck. It's just not possible. Now, the one area where people and government attempt to try to do this, thinking that they're safe in doing it and that they do have the authority to do that, is to try to direct people in whether or not they can hold to their faith and in their belief systems. Because, you know, obviously faith and belief are very subjective, Chuck. You know, it's all just based on made up rules and you know, belief systems that are out of date, archaic, retrograde. I love that word, retrograde.
I'll
explain why in a minute that I'm using it. But you know, you have a situation where, I want to kind of scratch a little bit here at this annoying, festering scab we call a presidential election right now. And, you know, just say that, you know, one of the key things that really nobody's giving an awful lot of attention to is the clash between worldviews that is taking place. Now, some people have recognized this and some have analyzed it, but there's a clash of worldviews taking place. And it seems that, well, let's just be quite honest, both of the major candidates are just paying lip service to the idea that God is sovereignly in control of everything and that they are accountable to God for all of the things that they're doing and all of the things that they're promising and all of the things that they're saying. If anybody watched, you know, we've now had the final, thank God, debate of the presidential election cycle that just happened here. We're recording this Friday morning, so this is really, you know, right before our show airs on Saturday. This happened on Wednesday, Chuck. So we've had the last presidential debate. Actually was great in one sense, because it was the first time any real substantive issues and questions were asked of the candidates. Although you couldn't have told it from the major media the next morning, because the major spin and obviously the meme that the major mainstream media, including our own lovely local newspapers in Ohio, wanted to spin was how one comment that one of the candidates made may wreck their entire party. And I just have to laugh.
Yes,
I mean, this, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, let's step back and just look at this from pure common sense and logic. All right. This is an absurdity. This election has become farcical. If one candidate saying, yeah, I'm not going to commit to saying I'm going to cede an election that actually hasn't happened yet, is enough that that's the main headline in every major media, including conservative media. I hate to say it, Chuck. But that's the major headline, and that's the focus. And the reason why that is the focus of the mainstream media, as we're starting to learn more as the WikiLeaks dump of emails that were retained, I guess, by or found by WikiLeaks from some source coming out of the DNC and possibly coming out of some of Hillary's email servers, is that the Clinton camp and the Democratic Party in general have a more than cozy relationship with the vast majority of the mainstream media, even to the point where some media outlets request permission for how to spin a story to put their candidates in the best possible light. Now, Chuck, you know, for years, conservatives of many stripes have claimed that the media is biased, that the media is weighed heavily to the liberals. And, of course, what's the media's first response to that?
Oh, no, we're completely neutral. We don't have any special contact with either party. We don't have any special viewpoint. Some of them will get down to the point where they explain that it's all, of course, this person has the correct views and this person doesn't, and therefore we must expose this person who doesn't have the correct view.
Well, we now know that that's completely a load of garbage.
Yes.
they have been colluding with the Democratic Party. They've been colluding with candidates and with people inside campaigns in order to make sure that they are giving the best possible spin they can possibly give to that candidate. And basically, Chuck, what would amount to in any other instance with campaign finance laws that we have in every state in the union and federally, an illegal contribution to the campaign. It's called coordination. If a third party organization does something that the campaign knows about that helps their candidate by attacking the opposition or supporting them and spending money doing it, and one would have to, you know, argue that the vast majority of the mainstream media should be brought up on campaign finance charges and campaign ethics charges for really exposing in many of these emails that were going back and forth from John Podesta, who is the campaign chairman for the Clinton election effort, that they were just absolutely, the media was letting Podesta and company basically write the news for them. And they were just going to dutifully go out there and put out whatever they wanted them to put out. Now, in a better world, if we had a Justice Department that actually believed in true justice, there'd be indictments coming already against many in the major media because of basically this is collusion to affect campaigns. This is. They're making expenditures. How much do you wonder if it costs to print one day's edition of the New York Times?
Oh, gosh. A lot of money.
Really? I mean, a lot. Yeah, well, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars, yeah. If not millions. And the New York Times, I mean, you know, it was funny because I was pulling up an article from the Times about this, and this is kind of segueing into something we've talked about earlier. This whole thing with the Michael Moore October surprise. I know you know a lot more about this, so I'm going to let you talk about it here in just a second.
Well, first of all, I want to talk about, you brought up this corruption thing.
Yes.
It's ironic, of course, that Breitbart has an article today, or it may have been yesterday. it was yesterday. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, quote, DOJ has made a priority to root out, prosecute, and prevent corruption. as Attorney General Lynch basically completely failed to root out, prosecute, and prevent corruption in the case of Hillary Clinton illegally using a private email server to do government business. I have to laugh also that a general who used to be on the Joint Chiefs of Staff just basically got sent to jail for doing the same thing. These remarks that she made in Rome to a law enforcement officials in a meeting, Lynch said, fighting corruption in all of its form is vital to the commitment to freedom and equality. And she says, quote, I have seen firsthand how corruption at bottom is about breaking trust.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, wow. Except when it's a former Secretary of State who's running for president and is one of the worst log rollers in political history, and her husband is now found out to have been taking gifts from people who are getting Clinton Foundation money. apparently the house is chock full of gifts of stuff that's been given to him. But this WikiLeaks has been a tremendous boon, and you'll notice that the mainstream media is essentially ignoring it until Chris Wallace actually asked Hillary some questions during the debate, and she rattled it into little pieces. I mean, she did not do well. We had talked earlier about this whole election result thing, Barry, and it's ironic that people who are Republican Party quote-unquote stalwarts who hate Trump are screaming about Trump saying he might question the election result because the game is rigged. And of course, Barry, anybody who's been near politics for any short amount of time knows that the game is completely rigged. And I was taken aback by these are the same people, the ones that are screaming about Trump accepting the election result no matter what the outcome, even if there's a difference of 200 votes, and not demanding a recount, an absurdity, are the same people who were screaming that Trump needed to pledge to support the Republican nominee no matter who he would be.
Right, exactly.
These are the same guys who have basically come out and said, I'm not voting for him.
John Kasich.
William Kristol, Carl Rove.
That's the entire Bush family.
Yeah, the Bush family. Some of the Bushes have come out and said, yeah, I'm voting for him, because they have to. They have to say that. That doesn't mean that they'll actually pull the lever or punch the button or whatever you do these days in whatever precinct you vote in. These are the same guys who basically came out and demanded. Kasich was one of the worst. You must agree to support the nominee no matter who he is because, well, Kasich thought it was going to be him. and the chances of that were essentially a snowball in Hades. These ironies, Barry, of the screaming and wailing and gnashing of teeth from these people who are supposedly Republican stalwarts basically points out that this is really a battle between populism and populist nationalism versus globalist elitism in the party. Am I saying that John Kasich is a globalist elitist? Oh, yes, he is. And he has been for quite a long time. Even in the 80s, when people were supposedly thinking that he was some kind of a conservative icon, he never has been. I mean, his conservative union rating during the Reagan presidency was in the 50s. That's not very good. That's terrible.
No,
he tended to be more conservative when a Democrat was in, but not much. And he's not the only example. We have John McCain, Mitch McConnell, all these people who are coming out and rightfully being upset about Trump and the things he's said about women and the comments that he's made. And again, ironic that who exposed the thing that was most damaging to Trump, the Entertainment Weekly or whatever, or, Entertainment Tonight or whatever the show that was. Who was the person who was the pivotal person in exposing all that?
Well, I forget.
It was Billy Bush.
Oh, yes.
And Billy Bush is George W. Bush's cousin.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, surprise. I mean, the way this thing got found out was Billy Bush took it to a party and played it. And somebody said, I have to, and they bypassed him and went to, went to the producers of the show and got the clip. That's where it came from. Billy Bush. And Billy Bush paid the price for that by being fired from his gig on the Today Show. See, I don't watch morning TV, so. But he got fired from his gig on the Today Show. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're instrumental in exposing Donald Trump. You lose your job because you didn't immediately punch him in the eye, basically. And he wasn't well-liked on that show anyway because he was a Bush. Because there are factions inside the globalist elitists. This is a little inside baseball. But there are two branches of the globalist elitists. There are the branch that are essentially Marxist. And the branch that are essentially what you would call public-private partnerships. They're really fascists. They do not want public ownership of corporations and that kind of thing. They want private ownership, and they want there to be a quid pro quo. They want these business leaders to be involved in government and that kind of thing, and take government money so that they do the things that the government wants them to do. They control industry through turning on and off the money spigot rather than simply taking control of the corporation and running it from the central authority in Washington, D.C. or wherever. So that the fight that you see going on, the fight that's been going on between the two parties is basically the fascists versus the Marxists. And I hate to put it that way, because when you get hear fascism, you automatically go over to Mussolini and all that stuff. Well, Mussolini was that, but Mussolini also had that whole that whole hooking up with Hitler thing and all that stuff. And I don't want to denigrate that one is better than the other, because it's not. They're both totalitarian at heart. And you can see this in these guys like Crystal going on Morning Joe and having a meltdown. And Crystal basically has, Joe Scarborough basically has to say, "Look, you're almost in tears." And he was. If you watch the thing, he railing against Trump, who's his party's nominee, and almost in tears. Well, Barry, we've been almost in tears over Republican nominees in the past, I think. But we don't get on Morning Joe and boohoo about it. We just basically eschew party politics and vote for individual candidates. That's I know you and I both of the same mind on that.
Yes.
And this is why, because we refuse to be painted into that corner of like this guy's our only hope. Well, Trump is not our only hope. Our only hope is Jesus Christ.
Amen.
And yeah. The fact is that neither Hillary Clinton nor Donald Trump feel that way, as you stated earlier. They are not attuned to the sovereignty of God in all things, including politics. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people in the church who've been hoodwinked by this idea that if it's all about the Supreme Court. Well, if Congress worked the way it was supposed to, it is designed to do, it wouldn't be all about the Supreme Court. It would be all about basically maintaining government within the bounds it was given in a legal document called the Constitution. And of course, the Constitution gets talked about a lot, and nothing gets done about it. It's like the weather, you know. Everybody talks about it, nobody does anything about it. And same thing with the Constitution. It's sort of an icon that gets brought out and marched around when certain important events are happening and everybody needs to kiss the icon to show their devotion to it. And then it gets put back in its little folder and nobody talks about it again until something else comes up. The other side does something. That's not the way this is supposed to work. That's not the way the Republic itself was designed to work, and that's not the way any of this should work. Now, you had asked me a question about Michael Moore. It's very interesting.
Well, I kind of gave you a softball pitch about Michael Moore, because, you know, just the same day that the final presidential debate was to take place, Michael Moore, who we've talked about on this program before, is premiering a brand new movie, Chuck. You know, it's incredible. Is it going to be like one of these great things like Roger and Me, or is it going to be Bowling for Columbine or one of the other wonderful, wonderful,
yeah,
you know,
none of which were
hard-hitting investigative reporting that Michael Moore does so well. Because this one, my friend, you know, I think we're seeing chickens come home to roost. Because Michael Moore's new film, which is only going to play for about a week or so, in New York and L.A. and then in a couple of other selected areas, I'm sure battleground states, if he thinks that he can get them in there, is called Michael Moore in Trump Land. And Chuck, I mean, you kind of are part of the ground zero nexus of how all that came together.
This thing was supposed to get filmed in my hometown and where I live, which is Newark. Those of you who are on the WLRY feed, you know where Newark is. This film was supposed to get filmed in Newark. It ended up being filmed in
Wilmington.
And the reason is that Michael Moore, who is exceedingly dishonest. I mean, let's just give the bottom line. He kept talking about how he'd been banned from the Midland Theater, and the answer is, you did not get banned. You didn't get a contract because you failed to meet our criteria to get a contract to use the Midland Theater. And we talked about this, I don't know, what, about 3 weeks ago, I think, on our show. We talked about the Midland Theater and the failure to reach a contract and all that stuff. He didn't get the contract with the Midland, and therefore, because he had to get this movie out before the election, and I'm amazed at how fast he cut this out, because this little thing in Wilmington happened, what, last week?
Yes.
Last week, or maybe the end of the week before.
I think it was 2 weeks ago.
So he cut this movie, and this is what he does. He I don't know if he had as much time to work his Michael Moore quote-unquote magic or not, because Michael Moore is exceedingly dishonest. He cuts in, he cuts out, he takes things out of sequence, and he puts them all together to be the most advantage to the story he's trying to tell. He is a storyteller, and by stories I mean stuff he made up.
Yes.
So Newark, I think, dodged a bullet by not having Michael Moore come here and sully the name of the town. Now, I don't know why he thinks that Newark is particularly Trump country. There is a kind of a heavy Republican contingent. Newark itself is Democrat Party affiliated. It's a union town in which all the industry packed up and moved away because the unions made it impossible to do business here. And that's a matter of opinion, I realize. But the fact is, I know some people who are involved in some of the shenanigans with major industry that was here and has moved away, gone to places where business environment is far more friendly. And I can tell you that there are people still stomping mad about companies that have closed up and moved away up to 15 years ago who really think that somehow they're all going to stomp their feet and these companies are going to run back. And it's like, no, they're not coming back because this is not a friendly business environment. And the city is not working real hard to make it. I just saw an article yesterday to kind of give you the feel. Everybody's happy that these old dilapidated corporate-owned properties are being torn down, and they're good. It's good. They're eyesores. But what's the first solution that the city's going to come to? The companies want to sell the land off to other companies, and the city thinks they should donate them for quote-unquote green space. Well, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard, to take a revenue-generating piece of property and take it off the tax rolls. Every time this happens, Barry, this is the kind of mentality you run into in some of these towns. And this, I'm only giving this as an illustration for what Newark's way of thinking is. The answer is that they turn these things into green space and look, it's attractive and blah, 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 but it's not generating any revenue, which means that everybody else's taxes have to go up to make up the difference.
Of course.
And already on the Newark ballot is what? An income tax increase.
Oh, boy.
So this is the dumbest way of thinking. And unfortunately, guys like you and me who think in these terms can't get any traction. Nobody wants to talk to us about it because, well, you know, that's not a positive way of thinking about things. And, you know, you get that usual nonsense. Oh, we got to be positive. Yes, we do have to be positive. And you know what you do to be positive? You get businesses in here and you get people jobs.
Mm-hmm. That would make a lot of sense.
And you stop picking their pockets. You stop picking the pockets of all the people who actually have jobs. At one point, I ran my company out of Newark. And one of the reasons we left was they had a huge income tax increase. And I said, bang it, I'm not paying that. that not only did they have an income tax increase, they had an income tax increase, and they made it, you know, I had to pay the income tax because I was getting the city services right, but then they passed a law that said if I had an ambulance run, I had to pay for the ambulance run because I'm not a city resident, but I'm paying the city income tax. Doesn't matter. Well, the whole sales job was that this was going to pay for the service. Nope, you're an out-of-towner, so you've got to pay it. Okay, bye, I'm leaving. And to this day, I will not operate a business inside a municipality for that reason. The taxes,
I don't really blame you a bit.
Taxes are too high. It's not friendly business environment. Every time you turn around, you know, every time you want to blow your nose, you have to get a permit and have an inspector come in and make sure you blew your nose correctly. Sorry.
I'd hate to be that.
Yeah, inspector. I don't want to be the nose blower inspector.
No, I do not want to be the nose blower inspector. Thank you very much.
But, well, you will have to have a permit for that, though. And you will have, and you'll have to be related to the right person to get the job. Again, more corruption that Attorney General Lynch was talking about. These giant bureaucracies create these corrupt relationships. But Michael Moore is all for that. Michael Moore would like to have come here, loaded up the audience with a lot of plants, because let's not kid ourselves, folks. You don't think that there aren't plants. I mean, look, a Clinton campaign official, two of them just lost their jobs for precisely that reason. It was revealed in WikiLeaks.
Yes.
That they were paid and paying people to go in and be agents provocateur at Trump rallies. And not just at Trump rallies. I mean, you know, this is not a new tactic. This tactic has been used for decades.
Well, sure it has, Chuck. Now, and let me, I want to clarify too, because I can't remember if it showed up in WikiLeaks or not, but I do remember that James O'Keefe, who's the undercover conservative investigative reporter who blows a lot of this stuff up.
You're right.
Actually got the coordinator, the guy who they hire to hire people to go in and be disruptors, who trains these people and then sends them in order to create an issue. So that then it can get captured in the media so that they can spin it against the other candidate. O'Keefe did an undercover, basically sting operation on this guy and got him to confess on a hidden camera that that's exactly what they were doing and that they were getting paid by the Democrats for it.
And Barry, I just want to tell you, 20 plus years ago when Motor Voter was being formed, remember when Motor Voter came about, that you would register to vote when you changed your driver's license and got a new driver's license and registered your car and all that stuff? Remember that became the federal law? And I said, this is the open door to voter fraud. Mm-hmm. Because nobody's checking citizenship. Nobody's checking any of the criteria. And sure enough, now we do see in WikiLeaks, and you're right, by the way, that was James O'Keefe who exposed those two people and forced them to resign from the Clinton campaign just this week.
Right, and those two people were Scott Fovall and Robert Creamer.
Thank you.
Who are basically inside operatives for the DNC.
Basically, John Podesta came out in WikiLeaks and said, look, we've already done this. All you need to vote is a driver's license. Well, folks, that's the direct result of Motor Voter, which, by the way, the Republicans caved on in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, or that thing would not have passed. This is 20 years ago. I think 22 years ago. I think it was passed in 94 or 95, somewhere in that vicinity. I think 94. And the fact is that now, basically, people are being registered to vote willy-nilly. And John Podesta's out there saying, all you need to vote is the driver's license.
Now, Chuck, and again, this is the nonpartisan nature of the mainstream media coming out once more. As soon as that broke, and of course, you know, when you've got it on tape coming out of the horse's mouth saying, yeah, we did that, and yeah, that's illegal to do, what does the media do? Are they really, you know, making a big deal out of it? Are they crying for investigations? Are they wanting John Podesta to step down and Hillary Clinton to suspend her campaign? No. What does the mainstream media do? Well, here's an article from NBC News, Dateline, last night at 6:43 p.m., headline, Trump Foundation paid activist filmmaker James O'Keefe. So what did they do? They went to try to go dig, and what happened is Project Veritas, which is O'Keefe's nonprofit that he uses, received a $10,000 grant from the Trump Foundation in May of 2015. Now, the mainstream media is trying to link that Trump paid him a year and a half ago so that he would do something like this right now. So, I mean, come on, Chuck. I mean, you've been around nonprofits. You know that there are a lot of nonprofits out there who really, you know, they go after any grant that's put forward and they write for them. As a matter of fact, being a grant writer is a very lucrative career if you want to get into it. But you look at this list of all these donations. I mean, this is really, it's really sad. I mean, they went back like years because there's a list here going back from to 2010 of all of these different groups that the Trump Foundation has given money to. And you know, really, if you look at it, the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation got $100,000 from the Trump Foundation. Caring for Military Families, $100,000 from the Trump Foundation. When it gets right down to it, I'm not sure that the mainstream media is doing their candidate any really great favors by publishing this whole page of all these donations from the Trump Foundation. Make-A-Wish, New Destiny Christian Center, Children's Hospital Foundation, a school district of Palm Beach got $1,000. There's all kinds of things, and it's a whole mix. But yeah, buried in the middle is one $10,000 donation to Project Veritas. And so there we have it.
There's the smoking gun before the guy even announced he was running for president.
And my question is, how much money did the DNC and the Clinton campaign and others pay the two agitator coordinators? That would be, I guess, community organizers, Chuck, because that's the community they were organizing, was the community of disruptive rabble-rousers. So how much money did Scott Fogel and Robert Creamer get from the DNC and their foundations, and maybe even the Clinton Foundation, to do what they're doing? But no. The Trump Foundation gave O'Keefe's organization a grant 18 months ago, and so therefore he paid James O'Keefe to do this. It's absolutely ludicrous.
I'd love to have a job where I got paid to expose corruption.
Well, yeah, I would too, and I think that, you know, like O'Keefe's, even though he gets death threats and everything else and browbeat by people, I think he enjoys what he does, and it's great because what he's doing is actually bringing transparency into this process and showing that there's a lot of corruption. I mean, he's actually uncovering the corruption. And it's interesting because O'Keefe, and when being interviewed after all of this went down, says that his next target is Donna Brazile, who has already been charged with getting help from CNN, who fed her the questions they were going to ask her candidate, Hillary Clinton, before the debates.
Okay,
during the second debate.
Further irony here. How did Brazil answer the question when she got asked that on Fox News?
She's being persecuted.
She went into a rant about how this was persecution. Now, I have to laugh about this, Barry. Okay, all of a sudden we're hearing that all these emails were stolen by Russian intelligence. Right. First of all, I don't buy that. I don't think Russian intelligence needed it. Did they have a hand in it? I wouldn't completely surprise me. But this meme that somehow the Russians like Trump better than Hillary, it's just really too good. She immediately went red herring and went off on this rant about how anyone who actually looks at the WikiLeaks data is in violation of the law because it's stolen. Barry, the irony is just too rich on this, because these guys pride themselves on stealing private communications all the time. The news media looks upon people who steal private communications as an attempt to expose things as heroes. Now, actually, Chris Cuomo on CNN recently said it's illegal for you, pointing at the audience, to look at these things. It's completely legal for us because we're journalists. Yeah, seriously.
That's rich.
So, Barry, this is the kind of weird, strange mentality that's coming out of these people. All of a sudden, it's treason to expose the WikiLeaks. I mean, I've actually heard this said. It's treason to expose the things in WikiLeaks because it's aiding and abetting Russia in their attempts to undermine the election.
Chuck, I'll agree with him halfway on that statement, okay? I would agree that, yes, it is treason to expose these documents through WikiLeaks, but it's not WikiLeaks committing the treason. It's Hillary Clinton and the DNC who have committed treason by sharing classified documents with God knows who in the face of the world,
yes.
in order to advance their political agenda. And if these WikiLeaks documents, which are actually emails and correspondence and documents from them, hit the public attention and the public view, there will be calls for finding Hillary Clinton and others guilty of treason against this country. I get it, but they're trying to, what they're doing is they're just trying to divert the attention
right.
to saying that, oh, well, Assange and WikiLeaks. And of course, you know, Assange is just sitting in the Ecuadorian consulate in London, I believe, under some kind of, you know, he's basically hiding out. He's taken refuge, asylum in the Ecuadorian consulate. Diplomatic immunity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, well, after this last round of leaks that really are hitting home on the Democratic Party, all of a sudden the Ecuadorian government cuts off Julian Assange's internet
access. Yes, all
access
of a sudden.
At the embassy.
Surprise.
So,
yeah.
Surprise. Why? Because they're being pressured by Secretary of State John Kerry.
And essentially Assange is hiding out because of some... He's been indicted in Sweden, as I recall, for
right.
supposedly for some sexual misconduct or something, that the source of the complaint is, shall we say, dubious. You know, who knows? You can't pronounce that it's not true because it may be true. I mean, Julian Assange is not exactly a moral icon.
No, he's not a choir boy. That's
no,
sure.
that, so you don't want to declare that it can't possibly be true. It's sort of like now these dueling sexual misconduct accusations, Bill versus Donald.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, some of these people seem to crawl out of the woodwork. It's interesting. Nobody says anything until somebody runs for president, and then all of a sudden everybody crawls out of the woodwork. I'm always highly suspicious of that kind of stuff. Maybe, you know, some of them can't get traction until such time as the press is actually looking at things. And I get that. So I'm always skeptical. When these things come out, I'm skeptical about the whole thing. I'm skeptical about politics in general, and especially about how politics are run through the media. That being said, well, you know what, Barry? We need to wrap it up because we're almost out of time, so close it up.
I just had two things to prove that God is still true and his sovereignty is still there. If I might, just real quick.
Go for
Number
it.
One, as everybody knows, the Cleveland Indians have actually made it to the World Series again for the first time since 1997. And very well could be on the line to win a title for the first time since 1948. And they might get some help, Chuck, because Ricky Vaughn wants to come out of retirement to pitch for the Indians. And if anybody's familiar with the old movie Major League, that was Charlie Sheen's character in the movie where he played for the Indians, Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn.
The
and
Wild
actually,
Thing, yeah.
Charlie Sheen has actually said that he would love to come out and throw out a pitch in one of the games of the World Series.
Yeah, he wants to throw out the first pitch.
He might just do it in uniform.
He wants to throw out the first pitch, yep.
He wants to throw out the first pitch. You know, I hope he gets his wish. I think it would be great for Cleveland for opening night of the World Series because Cleveland's got home field advantage because of the AL winning the All-Star game. That, you know, that he comes out, they open that back wall, and he comes strutting out to the song Wild Thing by the Trogs, and he goes and throws a pitch over the backstop. It would be perfect. It would be ironic. Okay, now, one other quick thing. Chuck, human nature is not going to change. Am I correct?
Oh, you are
without
correct.
Christ,
yes.
Without Christ.
Without Christ.
Okay. Well, a restaurateur in China, in Guiyang province in China, has found out that, well, her position on people needs to have a little bit of an adjustment. Because what she did, this was a restaurateur who thought mankind was basically good and did a pay what you want promotion to get customers to her brand new restaurant. Well, you know what happened, Chuck? The obvious. Her first week in business, she basically said customers can pay whatever they wanted for their food. She had lots and lots of business, and people said they enjoyed the food and they were pleased with the service, but basically, most of them did a eat and run. They didn't pay anything, which was not illegal in this case because she said pay what you want, and that's what they wanted to pay was nothing for it, and said some people paid about 10% of their bills and others only left a single yuan, which is a 15, which basically worth about 15 cents on the table. So 15 cents per meal. All in, the restaurant lost $15,000 in a tour. All because you had a bad view of human nature, thinking that mankind is basically good, when scripture says clearly that the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked above all things, who can know it?
And with that, we will end, because that's a great way to end this show. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.